It is now time for our main speaker. Please welcome Pat from Fullerton.
All right, good evening. My name is Pat, an alcoholic. All right. Grateful to be sober, grateful to be here. Thank you, James, for your wonderful talk. I want to thank Greg for asking me to participate in my recovery, though he's not here. No, it's good. Thank you, Tim, for meeting me at the door. And I don't know, like, we'll welcome our newcomers. Like, newcomers, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope that James said something that maybe brings you back to the meeting tomorrow. You know, I have alcoholism. You know what I mean? I'm like awkward, weird. I'm just like, oh, I want to leave already. You know. You know, I'm like, James is, you know, like when you're new, he's like, if you feel like not putting your hand out, I'm like that every day, you know? And I'm a nail biter, you know what I mean? I'm like gnawing on my nails. Some of them are bleeding, you know? And that's just who I am, you know what I mean? Like, I just have to get that out of the way. I feel that way now, you know, I just do. I have so many friends, happy birthday, those that took chips, like, that's awesome, you know? I appreciate the old timers that continue to show up to Alcoholics Anonymous, blaze a path in front of me, you know, and you hold the light in front of me, and I appreciate that, you know. I have alcoholism, not alcoholism. I'm like, yeah, I don't need to go to the meeting, you know. I need to go on vacation, you know. But I say yes to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I show up regardless of how I feel, you know. And so I'm here, you know. It's Mother's Day. Have a happy Mother's Day to the mothers. It's been a really hard day for me, you know, but I am here, you know, so that's important. And I'll share about that. And my sobriety date is the 23rd of October, 2002. I have a sponsor. His name's Mike S. He knows he's my sponsor. You know, I called him this morning and got honest about some fears and some insecurities and some things I have going on. And he just shared his experience, strength, and hope with me. You know, and basically it was like, yeah, me too. You know? And I love like the identification around here because I feel less alone. You know, I feel less alone. And I'm grateful for my sponsor. He knows everything. That's a good thing. And my home group's the South Coast Speakers Meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. We meet on a Wednesday night in Laguna Beach at the Women's Club at 7:30. And I think it's the best home group ever. I mean, you guys think yours is, which you probably should, you know. And hopefully you're stacking chairs with old Kelly over here, you know. And, you know, I love the enthusiasm in this meeting. I could feel it. It reminded me of like the old YMCA, you know, days. You know, I was like, dude, this is that same energy that this meeting was back then. And so it's good to see it back. You know, all the regular members that continue to show up. Thank you. I used to go to this meeting when I was a kid. My mom would sit in the far back with this cowboy hat on, and it had like all these buttons on it. And I would like be ADD looking at, you know, did she get a new button? You know what I mean? She would just bob her head, you know. I'm like, she's either going to the nut ward or she, you know, something's going on. And this lady named Lucia and Ann Cunningham. Lucia had the hat. Her husband sold the hats, you know. And they were like, you know, bobbing. I'd run around the YMCA, I'd go jump in the pool, you know, I was over there, you know. So this meeting has a really, this podium was there when I was a kid, you know. And so it has a lot of special meeting. I feel way underqualified to speak at this meeting, you know, and whatever. You know, we're all just bozos on the bus showing up to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know what I mean? And thank God, like, I'm just another knucklehead, you know, coming to AA, you know, here I am, you know, made a mistake again, you know, here I am, you know. I did it again, you know, and you keep telling me to come back. And I haven't had to take a drink since the 23rd of October of 2002. And that's a miracle. You know what I mean? Like, to sit here tonight, like, sober, like, is a miracle, you know. And I need to be with you. I need you more today than I did when I got here. You know what I mean? I need to sit within the miracles. I need to look into, because I'm like the agnostic temperament. You know what I mean? I'm like, yeah, I believe. I have a deep, profound relationship with God that comes and goes. You know what I mean? I'm like, seriously, I woke up this morning. I was like, I had the pillow out, the meditation. I had the incenses going. I had the right crystal formation, you know, and I was like, woo, you know, and I was like, God, I'm just so grateful that I get to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and I get to help people, you know. And I really felt it like deep down, you know. And then I got up and I was like, oh, wait, life's here, you know. I was like, oh, I don't know about life. Let me try to control this and control that. Like, whatever's going to happen here. What's going to happen? Next thing you know, God's way down the road and the phone rings. And it's like a sponsee. And I'm like, hello, you know. And I'm like sharing my experience, strength, and hope. And all of a sudden, I like, forgot about my problems. And like 2 hours later, all of a sudden, those problems worked themselves out. I was like, wow, oh, I didn't even have to do anything, you know. And so I need to be amongst the miracles. I need to look into the eyes of God, you know, and so it's good to be here. It's really good to be here. I feel like I'm in the room now, you know. My first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, I was 11 months old. My mom was going to prison for 10 years. I didn't have a drinking problem, you know. She was going to prison for 10 years. And in the middle of the sentencing, the judge was like, you know, you want to go to AA or go to prison? And she was like, I don't know. You know, we're prison, you know, and the attorney's like, dude, go to AA, idiot. You know, and the attorney raised her hand, you know, and off to AA she went, you know, and my mom went down to the Canyon Club. And I'm so grateful that the women in Alcoholics Anonymous met my mom at the door, you know, and it wasn't so like, well, I did. My story shows that it wasn't so far, you know, no kids allowed in the club meeting. You know, you guys just met me and you took me off to the side and, you know, you brought brownies for me and toys and hand-me-down clothes. I had like 25 generation down hand-me-clothes for kids in AA. And like, I could recite all the readings. At the end of the meeting, I was like, keep coming back, you know. The old timers were like, we're saving this seat right here for you, kid. Yeah. I had no clue what they meant, you know, but every night I would fall asleep at that Denny's off Alicia, you know. I mean, you know that Denny's, everyone, you've been there, yeah. But they would get the newcomer woman and they'd take her there, and I didn't know what was going on then. I was just a little kid, and I would fall asleep in the booth, and they would be drinking coffee and smoking cigarettes, and they would let the newcomer go at 2:15 in the morning, you know. And I always knew it was 2:15 because I'd look on the clock, and that's when we'd be heading home. And, you know, I watched a woman die of this disease on my mom's couch. You know, they detoxed on the couch. You know, there wasn't detoxes everywhere. And I was definitely not going to drink or use. You know, I was like the poster boy for AA. You know, I'm never going to drink. I'm never going to use. But I have the spiritual malady that the big book talks about, you know. And I'm like the little kid in elementary school that smells like poopy pants and syrup, you know. I'm like super weird. My hair's like, I'm like the kid that's, you know, the kid that smells like syrup, you know, from like a week ago, you know. And, you know, I'm a right fielder on the baseball team. Any other right fielders here? No. All right, good. I'm glad to be with my people, you know what I mean? We weren't like, yeah, right fielder, dog, you know. I was like resentful at the pitcher. You know, he was usually the coach's son. I hated that bastard. I'm like, angry, you know what I mean? I was resentful at him, and I'm like, I can't. He plays all the playing time, and he's a popular kid. And you know, I'm like wander off to left field, and I'm like looking for the dandelion. And the game's going on. The coach is like, the other side of the field, kid. I'm like, okay. You know, the game going on. I'm even clueless, you know. And I'm like trying to blow off all those things. I'm like wishing for a different life. Like self-pity is my mode of operation long before I ever took my first drink. I look outside. My mom got pregnant in a blackout, which means I'll never know who my dad is, you know. But I would sit out my mom's apartment window whenever my dad was. I mean, I would sit there and look outside the window, and I'd be like, I wonder if my dad, that's my dad. And I get so excited for the car, and the car wouldn't turn in my mom's apartment. And I would literally fall asleep every night, like waiting for my dad. And I remember being a little boy saying, if I don't have a dad, then there is no God. You know, my grandma took me to church. She loved Jesus. She did the dance. You know what I mean? I was already so self-obsessed. I was like, grandma, people are looking at us. You know what I mean? Like, she didn't want to dance. And I was just like, I want to go hide in the corner. You know, I don't want to be seen. And, you know, at one time I was on second base. I don't know how I got there. I was terrified. I was like, how'd I get here? Where am I at? You know, I didn't know, like, second base, third base, what do I do? I didn't know if I had the right cleats, like self-obsessed. You know what I mean? Wondering already, like, so consumed with what you thought about me. Kid cracked a line drive and I ran back to first base, you know. It was like a triple play in the wrong direction, man. Dude, little poopy pants back to the dugout. And all my friends are running out to their position with their gloves on, going out to their position. And what I heard him say that day is, you're a failure, you're a loser. Right now, none of them said that, right? But that was the voice in my head long before I ever took my first drink. Failure, loser, you're no good. And I remember looking at my mom and she's clapping. I mean, so proud of her kid, you know, and not proud because he got a triple play in the wrong direction, man. My mom was proud because it took me an hour to get out of that stupid car to go to that stupid field to play that stupid game one more time. And I remember looking at my mom that day saying, if I only had a dad, that it never happened. You know, and I quickly built a belief system that was going to separate me from you long before I ever took my first drink. My mom was my hero. My mom was my best friend, you know. You know, and if you're new, you're thinking, okay, those are funny stories, but what does that have to do with alcoholism? You know, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was a drug addict. You know what I mean? You go to AA, you ever go to AA and say, you know, are you newcomers? I'm like, yeah, I'm Pat, I'm an addict. And they're like, oh, there's an addict in our rooms, get him out of here, you know? I'm like, cool, man, you know, I want to piss the old guy off. You know, like I leave AA, I slam the door trying to piss him off. And no one ever followed me out and said, hey, kid, here's a big book. Take this home or to your bush, wherever you're living. Maybe I might have alcoholism.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I go out there and I die, you know? And I come back to AA and I'm like, I wouldn't identify because I didn't want the judgment from the old timer. You know, singleness of purpose, you know what I mean? Like, you know, we're here to protect AA, you know? You know, it's like, dude, AA will be just fine, you know? You know, how are we supposed to, how's a newcomer supposed to know the singleness of purpose or understand the traditions with 0 days sober? You know, and I go out there and I die and I come back and then oh, I'm Pat, I'm an alcoholic, and they're like, oh, put $2 in the basket, you know, fuck you know, and, you know, they want smart guys, like some are sicker than others, you know, I don't understand any of that. I leave AA's, you know, and no one ever followed me out, gave me a big book or anything. And so when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was at Charlie Street, and a guy sat down with me, and he read word for word and line for line on the book, and he turned statements into questions. And one of those statements talks about the effect produced by alcohol, right? Restless, irritable, and discontent, right? He's like, what is the effect produced for you? And I'm like, I'm not alcoholic. You know, he's like, whoa, champ, I didn't say you're alcoholic. He's like, I'm asking what's the effect. When you drink alcohol, what happens to you? And so I had to look at my first drink of alcohol. My first drink of alcohol was 9 years old. I was at an AA meeting in Laguna Beach. It was a Saturday night. Me and my little friend. Yeah, me and my little friends from AA were rip roaring around the meeting like we always did. And we were messing with this newcomer guy. His name was Rick. And I patched Rick and he had a trench coat on. He was pissed, you know, smoked cigarettes, you know. And so we would mess with him. We'd throw rocks at him and he'd chase us around. You know, he was a character. I mean, look around the room, you know, unless you're, you know, there's some characters here, you know. Oh, here, you know, here's Uncle Kelly. He's going to teach you how to fish. And off with Weirdo Kelly, I go learn how to fish, you know. And you know, this goofy guy, you know what I mean? And so he was like our babysitter. He was a chronic relapser, but he was like our babysitter. You know? So I threw a rock at him and he grabbed me like he always did. I kicked him in the shin like oh, and I ran outside. My little friends were and he chased after us and we ran outside that hospital in Laguna Beach. There's a parking structure and we're between the third and the fourth story. And those kids pulled out a bottle of Jose Cuervo. And I didn't know what alcohol was going to do to me or for me, but I knew right at 9 years old that if I didn't drink it, those kids weren't going to like me. The bottle got to me. I took a pull off that bottle. I hated the taste and I spit it out. And when I spit it out, I was overcome with fear. And what that fear told me was that I wasn't going to be like the rest of my life. The bottle went around the second time, and I was excited about getting that bottle. And I wasn't excited about getting drunk, man. I was excited that Poopy Pants is going to have some friends. And I took a pull off that bottle. I talked myself into holding that tequila down. And I can tell you the exact effect alcohol has on this alcoholic body. In that moment, all that fear went away. Like in that moment, I felt a part of those kids. You know what I mean? In that moment, like, you know, I was just one amongst you. And I'm not here to say that alcohol stopped working. Alcohol did the same thing. That's what it did for me all the way till I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I slowly stopped going to meetings with my mom. And it was hard to get booze at mom's. But by the time I was in high school, I grew up right here, Dana Point, Mission Viejo. These are my hood. This is my hood. You know what I'm saying? And this is what I mean by this is my hood. I'm listening to like Eazy-E and NWA and Ice Cube, and I got size 50 Dickies pulled all the way up, and I got a 5XL sweatshirt. You know, we had, you know what I'm saying? I got a 5XL sweatshirt. I'm pouring beer in the curb for the dead homies. You know what I mean? And dude, I'm like Poopy Pants, never been in a fight. You know what I'm saying? I'm like the Chihuahua with a big mouth. You know what I mean? I talk a lot of shit, you know, and then you want to fight. And I'm like, yeah, get him. And then all my friends beat you up. I'll get like a little kick in there, sucker, you know. But I'm leaning back, orale homes, you know. And And I'm a gang member, and I come up with great plans, you know, and my friends are hungry. So I was like, dude, let's call Domino's Pizza. And you grab the money. You grab the pizza, and you hand them leads for the money, and you guys take off. And you're like, that's a great idea. Well, you went with them and had my stun gun, which wasn't part of the plan. And like one guy grabbed the pizza, the one guy handed him leaves, and the third guy stunned the pizza man with a stun gun. You know, and he went down. And the next day, I get a call slip to go to the office, right, to go see the principal. Anyone else get those call slips, little pink slip, right? You know what's going down, right? I'm going up there to get the potential talk, you know, and I'm already planning out, like, how I'm a loser. I already know I'm a loser, you know. And there's two sheriffs and a detective, and they want to know about a strong-arm robbery case, you know. And I'm terrified of what you think. I'm willing to do whatever it is I think you want me to do. Well, the truth is, I want you to like me, you know what I mean? But I don't want to be a rat. So I take the fall for my friends, and I go to juvenile hall for 6 months, and then I'm on house arrest for 6 months. And all that did was turn me into a real gang member, you know? And this is called delusional. But my little gang came to see me on house arrest. They brought me a 40 of St. Ives. They brought me a joint, and they brought me an Indian ink and a needle and thread. And they're like, you need to give yourself a tattoo for your crazy life. And so I gave myself three dots on my ankle for Mi Vida Loca and in Mission Viejo, you know. And they left, and I was sitting in my room going, man, you never even been in a fight, you know. So I plucked one of the dots off, and now I have two dots, you know. And but now it's real. Now I'm a real gang member. I got the tattoo. I got the homies, you know, and I don't know that I have a progressive illness. I don't know that alcohol is already making decisions for me. You know, my mom found a bag of weed and a bottle of tequila and a bag of cocaine. And she's like, you can't smoke weed and drink in my house. And I don't know how you hear that, but I hear I need to hide it better, you know? And so I hide it better for a month or two. And I come out of a blackout, my pants are on my ankles, I'm peeing all over my mom's fish tank, you know. And my mom would go speak in Montana, and I'd steal her truck for the weekend. You know, she'd go speak in Idaho, I'd throw a full-blown party at her house. I don't care about her recovery. You know, I don't care about my mom, like school. I have a ninth grade education. And I come home one night, and the top lock's locked, and I ring the doorbell, and my mom's standing there with another bottle of tequila, a bag of weed, and a bag of cocaine, and she's like, you're kicked out. I was 17 years old, and I went into my bedroom, and I packed my backpack, and I walked by my mom, and I looked at her right in the eyes, and I said, I'm going to do everything I can to ruin your life. And like, I watched my mom's heart break right now. Now, I don't know how you deal with shame and guilt, man, but this alcoholic arrogance, I puff my chest, I grab my mom by the collar, slam her against the wall, F you, I hate you, you're never going to see me again. And I went to an abandoned house in Aliso Viejo where we get loaded at, and I took my first hit of crack cocaine at 17 years old. And I only tell you that because that's the progression of my disease. Alcohol was already making decisions for me. Well, my mom said to me that night, she said, you can stay here and be sober or go out on the streets and get loaded, but you need to make a choice. Alcohol told me that I was kicked out of the house. My mom was my hero. My mom was my best friend. Alcohol told me to put my hands on my mom. I was already powerless over alcohol. At 17 years old, I didn't get sober until I was 27. And the progression for me was that I was on Dead Tour. I don't know if you remember, anyone familiar with the Grateful Dead, you know, a couple hands. No one remembers it, you know. And but I was in Ohio on Dead Tour in August of 95, and Jerry Garcia died, and we all thumbprinted Crystal Wash LSD, and I remember 20 minutes of it. And 59 days later, I came to in San Francisco. I was panhandling, and by the time I was 25, I got sober at 27. By the time I was 25 years old, I was panhandling. And if you know panhandlers, man, it's just like people look right through you. You know what I mean? Like you don't even exist, you know? And I can't steal. My first call that my mom got was that I got hit by a truck and I was going to the hospital, and she didn't know she was going to help me. And I taught my mom how to wire money. And my mom wired $150 for me for 8 years, you know? And so I was panhandling and I'm right in front of Powell Street and Market in front of the cable car. Anyone familiar? I'm a tenderloin kind of alcoholic. Eddie and Jones is my corner, you know. But I wander down there, and I was leaning up against this quarter toilet and this girl started talking to me, you know. She hadn't found Al-Anon is what happened. Because we fell in love. I mean, dude, within like 30 seconds, I think it was. I don't know. She moved me in her house, you know. Now I got a house now. I got a girlfriend, and normal living is the solution for alcoholism, right? right? And then she detoxed me. She's like, you need to stop. And I'm like, you know, you're right, you know? I got 7 days clean and sober, no steps, no sponsor, no God. I got a girlfriend and a place to live, and I'm a taker, so I push this for about 45 days until I'm kind of forced to get a job. And she's like, you need to get a job. I'm like, dude, you're nagging, you know? And but I'm not an idiot, you know what I mean? So I go get a job, and I get a job at the Presidio. Anyone familiar with the Presidio in San Francisco? Okay, there's some heads bobbing. The Presidio at the YMCA, 45 days clean and sober, the YMCA assistant director at an after-school program, you know? And day one, man, I'm sober, and I got a job, and I'm like, I got my little lunch, and I'm off to work. I go, and I love my job. There's 200 kids. They love me, you know. And day two, I show up to that work, and this little second grader goes, Pat, come over here. I want you to meet my mom. And this little second grader, I go walk over to his mom, and he introduces me. He says, Mom, this is my best friend, Pat. I got a best friend now. Got a girlfriend, I got a place to live, and I got a best friend. So I go home, I kiss my girlfriend, I thank her for my life, and no steps, no God, no sponsor. I show up to day three, and I'm pushing that kid on the swing, man. Not even a cloud, not even, well, San Francisco wind, nothing. And I'm pushing this kid on the swing, and the thought crossed my mind that a bag of heroin would be a good idea. Yeah, oh, that's right. Dude, I called the connect. He brought me a pint of tequila and a bag of dope. And I went into that elementary school bathroom where those kids were going in and out of. And I shot dope and I nodded out on that toilet. And I came to with that second grader who found me on that toilet crying. And he screamed for the director. And the director came and she said, you have 10 seconds. Get out. 10 minutes. Get out of here. I'm calling the cops. And that little boy was crying. He said, Pat, come back, come back. And for the first time in my life, like, I could see how my behavior affected another human being. And I called my mom and I said, Mom, I need help. And she sent me to Betty Ford Treatment Center. And the only thing that happened for me in treatment was I fell in love. And it was real. It was God's will. You know what I mean? And I mean, we had the same sobriety date. You know what I'm saying? So I wrote my sponsor, my girlfriend, a note. I'm like, where should we go to sober living? She wanted to go to Hawaii. And like, this is so romantic, you know? And I thought that this was about consequences. And my consequences were a relation to my drug addiction, right? My consequences were related to my heroin use. And so I got on the plane as a full-blown heroin addict, even though I identified my alcoholism at 17. And so I ordered a Heineken, because you can drink if you're an addict. Going to sober living to be with your sober girlfriend, right? This is the insanity of alcoholism. And I got off the plane, I stood there and I thought about it, sober living or bar, you know, thinking that, not knowing that when I took the first drink, I lost the power of choice. I think I have a choice. I'm sitting there thinking about it, man. And I said, I'll go to sober living tomorrow. And I walked in the bar and I ordered another drink, and that girl ended up overdosing and dying and never making it to Hawaii, you know? But my mom found Al-Anon, which really sucked, you know, because the gig's up, you know what I'm saying? About to get sober now, you know, because I call mom, like, Mom, I need money. She's like, no. I'm like, what do you mean no? She's like, no's a full sentence, you know. I'm like, well, Mom, if I only had a dad, I wouldn't be in this situation. It's all your fault. And I hit that guilt button and she'd go, wire me the money. Then I'd call her and tell her how much I love her and she'd wire me the money, or she'd call me and say, I'm going to set a boundary, and bulldoze right through that boundary, you know. And so she bought me a plane ticket back to Los Angeles, and I landed at LAX and I went straight downtown to Skid Row. Last year and a half of my drinking and using was downtown LA and Skid Row. I used to say I lived on Skid Row. I survived Skid Row. My last hustle in the end is I wander up to West Hollywood and I go into those gay bars and I flirt with enough men to get enough alcohol and drugs in my body and hope that I make it out before I black out. You know, as a straight man, that's the goal, is to get out in time, you know. One thing I've learned in AA is if you're laughing, you're identifying. You know what I'm saying? Because we don't shoot our wounded around here, you know what I'm saying? And some days I do, and some days I don't. I start coming to in situations I don't want to come to. You know, the only thing that's going to take away the shame and the guilt is more alcohol. I drink more alcohol, and I'm back in the gay bar. I'm telling myself I'm not going to do this anymore, and I'm back in those bars. I make that promise, I'm not going to do this, and I'm back in those bars. 3 days before I got sober on the 20th of October, I crawled out of a motel, sexually assaulted me 12 times. I don't have any other option but to kill myself. I'm walking down Santa Monica Boulevard. There's a U-Haul truck coming fast enough for me to jump out in front of it. It's 5:30 in the morning. The liquor store's closed, man. I'm about to jump in front of this truck. The thought crosses my mind that a pint of tequila would be a better idea. And my whole body shifted in this direction. I started walking in the liquor store one more time. Alcohol saved my life. And I'll never forget that 30 minutes of madness and terror. Sitting on the wall with that, and the demons just screaming. The snap about to come out of my skin. The anxiety so intense. When the lady opened the liquor store door, I immediately got that sense of ease and comfort just knowing. And I ran in that liquor store and I got that pint of tequila and I went back on that wall and I put half that bottle back. And when I put half that bottle back, all that shame and all that guilt and all that remorse and all that fear went away just like that. And I start having that conversation I always have with myself, you know. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous talks about that fierce determination. And I had that fierce determination that this time, man, was going to be different, man. This time I was going to go out and I was going to live this thing called life. And I was going to make it right with everybody. And I was going to go back to school and I was going to be something. And in the middle of that conversation, the second voice told me to drink that second half of that bottle. And I put that second half of that bottle back and I blacked out for 3 days. And when I came to 3 days later, doing the same thing I did 3 days prior, that morning I had a spiritual defense. I didn't believe in God until I was 10 years old. But I know tonight I had a spiritual defense, man, because I called my mom. I had this thought, call your mom and ask for help. And usually I would call and ask for help with a plan. Mom, I need help. Here's the plan. That day I called and said, Mom, I need help. And my mom said, I can't help you anymore. She said, just stay right where you are and someone from Alcoholics Anonymous will come and get you. So if I come and get you, I'm end up killing you. She hung up on me. And I'm so grateful she didn't come that day. I would have manipulated her for 20 more bucks. I can guarantee I wouldn't be standing here tonight. And Mom called this guy named Jack. Jack Walrus. He just passed away a couple months ago. That guy had just gotten off the phone with his doctor that told him he had stage 4 cancer and he had 6 months to live. And the next call that he got was from my mom saying, I need help with my son. And he didn't say, have the kid call me. He said, where's Jack? My mom gave him the address and he went and grabbed a new guy and they drove down to that motel in Anaheim on Harbor and Ball behind that mobile right there. And the guy barged in the door. I was 98 pounds. I hadn't showered in 68 months, man. I had a sweatshirt just shaking on the bed, you know what I mean? Just like vibrating. And the guy barged in the door. He's like, my name's Jack and I'm an alcoholic. You know? Noodling up, you know what I mean? I was like, whoa, bro. Vibrating with, you know, I was like channeling information guy, you know what I mean? I had really important data to share with people, you know. So many noise, you know, twitching around, you know. And the other guy, John, was on a walker. He's like, my name's John. I got 90 days sober. You know what I mean? I'm thinking losers, you know what I'm saying? Maybe some guys from the Laguna Niguel speaker meeting or something. These idiots, Kelly, you know what I mean? But here I am, that same little boy on that baseball field that looked at his mom and said, man, if I only had a dad, it'd be different now. And I'm separating myself from those good folks that came for fun and for free. And I know tonight that when I called and asked for help, I walked into God's grace. It was a gift I didn't even know I wanted. Because that guy Jack said, come with me, kid. And I got off the bed and I followed that guy at that motel and we got downstairs. And he said, just get in the van, kid. And I got in the van. And if you're new, just get in the car. Just get in the car. I've been getting in the car for 22 years. Something happens in the car. You know what I mean? Connection happens in the car. I didn't know the connection was happening, man. Those guys were telling me their stories, and they drank, and they went to the hospital. And I'm like, I don't fucking relate to these guys. They drink, and I go to the hospital. I don't go to the hospital. Oh, man, I lost all my kids. Like, I don't even want kids, you know? Okay, great. And before he knew it, I ended up at Charlie Street. You know what I mean? I was looking for the differences, not the similarities. You know, we hear it all the time. Look for the similarities, not the differences. Good luck. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm looking at everything, why I'm not like you. And I ended up on the couch over there, right by the fish tank. Anyone familiar with the Charlie Street? Okay, good. You know what I mean? That fish tank. I had a sense of peace. You know, But this guy Pete came over. Pete was like tattooed from head to toe. And Jack goes, "When you drink, what happens to you?" Pete goes, "I go to prison." You know, and I was like, "Not me." You know. He goes, "Where do you go when you drink?" I go, "I go to jail." He goes, "Oh, John, come over here." And this guy John, guess where John drank, and John went to jail. Oh, ole, oms, you know. And then John grabbed Pete. Pete came over. Pete had the teardrop. You know. Ain't no Popeye dog, you know, and oh yeah, man, I drink and end up in jail. I go, hey, me too. Pretty soon there was like 10 of us, man, drinking and going to jail. We were high-fiving, you know, orderlying it, looking for Popeye and Smiley, and I was in the game. I didn't even know I was in the game. Jack came over, man. He manipulated me. That's what he did. If you're new here, keep telling your story. It's in the story that we relate. I hear all the time, man, we don't carry the mess. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I need to know you're like me. No lectures to be endured around here. And he goes, when you go to jail, do you want to go back to jail? I'm like, sometimes. He goes, no, but when you go to jail, do you? I'm like, no. He goes, then what happens? I go, my mom comes and sees me, and I look at my mom in that glass, man. You remember that look? That look of disappointment on the phone, looking through that glass. I promise, Mom, I'm not going to drink again. I'm not going to do drugs again. I promise, Mom. And she goes, just go to the H&I meetings or go to church. And so I do. I go to H&I, and I go, man, when I get out, they were looking like suits. I want to get out of jail. I'm going to go sit with those guys, you know, make AA attractive, you know. I go to church. I give my life to Jesus, you know what I mean? I'm like, happy, joyous, and free. Ochoa, roll it up. I roll it up. I give all the homies a commissary because I'm not going back to jail. I'm in the holding tank, and I start thinking. I'm like, thinking. I'm like, well, you know what? I got busted for crack cocaine. Alcohol's not my problem. I could drink alcohol. I drink alcohol. One, two, three beers. I'm down the street. I meet a new friend. Now we have an empire going on. And before I know it, I end up back in jail. He goes, what do you mean? I thought you made a promise. I go, yeah, I did. He goes, did you mean the promise? I meant the promise. What happened? My mom comes and sees me. Look at my mom. Make the promise again. Go to the H&I. Do the church. Give my life to Jesus again. Sit in the holding tank. Oh, you know what? Heroin's your problem. Alcohol's not your problem. I get out of jail. I drink the alcohol. Before I know it, I'm back down the street. I'm in a motel for like 7 days solving the world's problems, you know? He goes, what happened? I said, I got arrested. He goes, oh, that's great. You got arrested again. I go, yeah, I got arrested again. What happened? My mom goes, story after story after story. He goes, Pat, stop me in my tracks. If you can concede both propositions, physical, that when you put alcohol into your body, you can't stop and end up in jail. And more importantly, with a sober mind, you have a mind that's driving you back to the thing that's going to kill you. He said you might be alcoholic. And he left me in that silence like that. And I was like, Jack, I'm alcoholic. He was like, oh, my God, I got a new guy. And he was all so excited. He brought all the guys from Charlie Street. Hey, meet Pat. He's finally admitted he's alcoholic. And I was like, oh, my God, it's weird, awkward, you know. They're like high-fiving me. You're alcoholic, you know, which was weird, you know. And he started talking about God. And I was like, dude, I don't believe in God. I'm never going to believe in God. He goes, that's great. He goes, you don't have to believe in God in AA. He's like, but I'll tell you what, the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, the day I walked my daughter down the aisle, I had joy for my daughter. I was like, what? Joy for another human being? He's like, yeah, every Saturday, I watch my grandkids play baseball and I have happiness for my grandkids. I came to believe that I too could have happiness and joy. I sat here tonight listening to James give a 10-minute with happiness and joy in my heart, Brother James. I made a decision to do what that guy told me to do. I did a third step prayer that jail. He looked at me, he's like, you need to take a shower. You know, I thought, how did he know? You know, and I did. I went into that shower. I fell down on the ground on that detox floor of the water, crying hysterically. It's like, well, walking down there, you know, that scream with no mouth. And that guy Jack got on the floor of the detox with me, dude, and he held me down there. He said, kid, it's gonna be all right, kid. He's like, kid, it's gonna be all right, kid. He's like, kid, it's going to be all right, kid. It's going to be all right. And I got some sort of trust for him. He asked me to stand up. I stood up. He said, take off your shirt. Took off my shirt. The guy walked me into that shower, and I stood in that shower shaking violently while the water hit my body. And the guy took a washcloth, and he took a bar of soap, and the man scrubbed my back. And for the first time in my life, I felt love from another human being. Right here in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, unconditional love we have for one another. Same love that I felt walking in the room, same love that I feel right now at this moment looking across. He said, "There's clothes. There's some clothes on your bed." "Those are. I'll put those. I'll see you downstairs." I'll never forget putting on that brand new pair of socks, man. He allowed me to have the only bit of pride and dignity that I had left, you know. And I walked downstairs and I started writing inventory. And I read my inventory to him. I was already making amends 4 days sober, you know, and not because I was altruistic. It was like do it or die. I'm gonna write the thing, you know. And he sat there with me while I wrote my inventory. And 4 days sober, I had turned myself in on a 3.5 year prison term, you know, which I thought was a little extra. He's like, "No, God's in your life." I go, "I don't believe in God." Remember, he goes, "You can borrow mine," you know. And so I show up down here in Laguna Niguel, and I'm standing there, and the judge sentenced me to 3.5 years in prison. I start going that holding tank, man. "Why'd you trust that guy?" He said, "Everything's going to be all right." And I got on my knees, and I said, "God, I don't believe that you exist, but they told me there's a God. Get me the hell out of here, will you? You know, amen." And got on the bus and I'm going to prison and God doesn't work and sponsorship doesn't work and the door closes and I'm looking outside the window and I just think, man, for the first time in my life, I want to be sober. For the first time in my life, I want to do this thing and I'm going to prison. And then the door opened and the guard goes, "Ochoa," and like three of us raised our hand, you know, and she goes, "Patrick." I was like, "That's me." The other two dudes are pissed, you know what I mean? Go out in front of the judge. He goes, "I don't know why I'm doing this, but I'm going to give you another chance." So there's a member of Alcoholics Anonymous pointed to my sponsor over there. He said, "That guy's been fighting for you all day to get out." And if you're new, that's what we do for one another. We fight for each other every time, you know. And I walked into the Salvation Army, and I was met by a guy by the name of Tim P. And Tim P. was a guy I used to get loaded with. And Tim P. was the guy that answered the phone, and my sponsor said, "I got a kid, Pat Ochoa. God's working in my life, though I can't see it, you know." And I was really trying to avoid my mom being Mother's Day, but I have 5 minutes left. I could talk about my kid, but I think I'd do justice, you know. And man, I made my amends to my mom at 90 days sober, my good AA mom. She's like, "It's about time," you know. I sit down with my mom and I was like, "Hey, remember that time I told you that I needed the money for the hospital?" I go, "That was a lie." She goes, "I know. I remember that one time I needed money for clothes, for work?" I go, "That was a lie too." She's like, "I know." I'm like kind of dumped. I'm like, "Then why did you give me the money?" And she said, "Because when you left my house at 17, you broke my heart." And she said, "I stayed up every day for the last 10 years, terrified I was going to have to come identify the body." The real harm wasn't that I lied to my mom. The real harm is that I robbed my mom of her security day in and day out for one more. And I broke, man. I could see how my behavior affected the one I loved the most, man. And I broke and I was crying and my mom was crying and I didn't know how I was going to make it right. You know, the little card was blurry with the teardrops, you know. I was like, I looked at my mom and I was like, "Mom, how can I ever make this right?" And she said, "I just want you to get in the middle of AA and help as many people as you can." And I was like, "Fuck, this AA thing's amazing." And I ran back to my sponsor. I was like, "We're healing. We love each other. This is great." He goes, "What about the money?" I was like, "She didn't want the money, Jack." He goes, "Yeah, but AA wants you to pay it back." You know, I thought, you know. I go, "How am I going to pay her $100,000? It's $25 at a time. And so I had to write my mom a note. "Mom, I love you and I appreciate you today. Leave her $25. Every week, "Mom, I love you and I appreciate you today. Leave her $25. Then 6 months in, I had to write the note every day and leave the money once a week. And I don't know, a couple of years in, these notes were turning into like love novels. I was like, "I love you so much." They had little teardrops. I would circle the teardrop, you know. I was falling in love with my mom, and it was weird. I was like, "I don't want to." I called the sponsor. I'm like, "I'm not doing this anymore." He goes, "You don't have to do it anymore if you don't want." I said, "But how free do you want to be, kid?" "Mom, I love you and I appreciate you." And thank God, because I would have missed the miracle, man. I wrote my mom a text, sent my mom a note or a card or called my mom every day to the day that she died, you know. And on a Wednesday night at my home group, my mom called me after the meeting and she complained about the speaker, you know, like some of you will do tonight. You know, it's all good, you know. And I said, "Mom, I'll see you in the morning," you know. And I go see my mom in the morning and her wife rushed her off to the hospital because she had a tumor that blocked the breathing. And my mom rocked an oxygen tank like nobody's business. You know what I mean? Me and my mom went to Canada to speak one time, and I didn't know how I was going to get in. She's like, "If it's God's will, we'll get in," you know? And so we pushing her in the wheelchair, and the guy that stamps the passport, she started flirting with him. She started telling him how hot he was, and he was 22. She was asking, "How old are you? And if he'll go on a date with her," you know? He was like beat red. He just fucking stamped us in, you know? I go, "Mom, was that God's will?" She's like, "I don't know. We're in Canada, you know." One time we were in Nebraska to talk, and I got up. I said, "Mom, get in the wheelchair. I'm not getting that goddamn." I said, "Mom, just get in the wheelchair." She wouldn't get in. I said, "Mom, when are you going to let me love you?" My mom sat in the wheelchair. And I was so mad, the most proudest day. I was walking with my mom. I got a bright idea. I started running through the airport with her. Her oxygen tank was falling off. She's like, "Stop, stop." We got to the bottom of the hill, and something changed in our relationship. I didn't know what it was, but that night I went to bed, and I said, "Mom, I'll see you in the morning." And I woke up in the morning. I turned the shower on. All this red water came out of the head, the shower head, you know. And she had snuck a dye tablet in there the night before, you know. And I came out of the shower, and she was like, "Got him," you know. And what happened was, with our relationship turned to from a mom authoritative relationship to a friend relationship, you know. And I called my mom, and she complained, and we put her on hospice. And she was, "I'm only going on hospice to get off hospice." Sure enough, she was back at the women's meeting and back at Legacies and back at the home group. I'm like, gangster mom, you know. And Wednesday night, I called her after. She called me, complained about the speaker. I said, "I'll see you in the morning." And I showed up, and the tumor had grown back in 2 weeks. And I know it's the end, and I don't want it to be. I don't want it to be the end, you know. I was going to Idaho to speak, and I didn't want to miss my mom's last breath. I got in prayer, and I was like, "God, I don't know what you want me to do." And I heard the message in meditation, you'd be a service to Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't like that answer, so I prayed 2 days in a row. I get the same answer. I don't like it again. I prayed 3 days in a row. I get the same answer. And so I call the sponsor. I go, "Sponsor, what do I do?" He said, "What did God want you to do?" Thank God that sponsorship always guides me to God rather than sponsor dependence. I went and kissed my mom. I said, "Mom, I'll be back." And I flew to Idaho, and I was, I don't know if you ever been to a YPOP, man, but it's crazy. You know, there's 1,000 kids screaming, yelling, rock started up, DJing it. I'm like, I just want to die. I want to go see my mom. You know, and I get a call from my friend Michelle, says, "You need to hurry up and get back. Your mom's been unresponsive for 3 days. She hasn't moved, and she hasn't said a word. She's waiting for you to get back so she could say goodbye." And I got on my knees in front of 1,500 people, and I was like, "God, I don't know what you want me to do, but I'm willing to do whatever it is." And I heard the message loud and clear: "You need to be a service to Alcoholics Anonymous." And I gave a talk that night, and the next morning I got on a plane, and I landed at John Wayne, and I got in my car, and I flew on the 5 freeway, got off Crown Valley, made a left at Jardine's, where my mom was where I grew up, and went into the room where my mom was on hospice, and my mom sat straight up like this. Spirit felt spirit walk in the room that day. The 10th step promises we have entered the world of spirit. And I went into my mom's arms, and she held on to me, and she said, "Pato, I want you to know you did the right thing." She said, "I love you, I love you, I love you." And that was the last words that my mom said. And 3 days later, my mom died and my heart broke. But what happened for me in that moment, man? Thank God for strong sponsorship. Thank God for showing up to the home group and stacking chairs. Thank God for answering the phone. Thank God for all the commitments that we have around here, right? It's what happened for me, and I know it happened for, I believe it happened for my mom too, but there was a level of forgiveness that was so profound. All she wanted me to do was to get in the middle of you and help as many alcoholics as I could, and I honored my mom's amends the day that my mom died. I kissed my mom on the forehead. I said, Patio, I want you to know from this day forward, I'll carry on your legacy in Alcoholics Anonymous. If you're new here tonight, my message is that Alcoholics Anonymous is a lot more than just not drinking. Alcoholics Anonymous is a process of growing up. And it's my prayer every night you find a sponsor in this room that has a working knowledge of the book and understands the three sides of our triangle: unity, service, and recovery. My name is Pat. I'm an alcoholic, and I love you all.